session number 24830, reel 9.
Mr. Hipperson, reel 9. Now, we got to the point, you'd just gone back on leave, we talked about that, and then were you recalled to the hospital, to Aldershot?
Well, yeah, it was just 14 days leave from the hospital, and I had to go back, report back to the hospital at Aldershot. Then I still kept deliberating what to do with the eye, and eventually I said, well, we'll have to cut it open again, and remove these pieces of shrapnel, which we're afraid will cause infection. And which they did. I had another operation on the eye, and they removed these bits. But that still left, there was a piece in the lens, which they didn't touch. A little fragment in the lens they didn't touch. And pretty much lost the sight of the eye then anyway.
So that would...
And the cataract closing over it. What was it being pulled about and whatever that's... And the little bit of shrapnel in the lens and...
You know. No, it continued to look all right, because it's
visually
still there now.
Perfect. Visually perfect. And that was a big thing. Being a young guy at the time, 21, I had my 21st birthday in the Aldershot Hospital. And remember that.
So it was more, I mean, it's like having a ridiculously lazy eye in a sense. It looks absolutely
well,
normal
it looks,
now.
It looked, yeah. That always did. I just couldn't see it. I had about, I don't know, on a scale of 1%, I suppose I had about 0.5% of vision on it. And because of the lens, and that was getting worse, there was a little piece. But the thing was, the eye looked great and nobody knew, so that was fine. And I found it a bit hard, and I was discharged from hospital. And but they discharged me. Well, they didn't really discharge me, to be honest. They said, well, we can't do any more, but you're ain't right. You won't be discharged from the army, because you don't get a discharge, because you lose one eye. And eye specialist, who is a colonel, he said, oh, you don't really, you know, ought to go back to uni or anything, and he sort of excused me all duties, and sent me back to, but over me, you know, up till then, technically, I could have got sent back to the unit out in the career again, and, but of course that stopped that, and
so where were you sent to? Where did you go?
So I went to the depot of the Royal Norfolk Britannia Barracks. To report to the depot at the Britannia Barracks. And
when would this be, roughly? Are we in September
this
or
would,
October?
No, this would be in about... it would be in October. That was in October, late October. And
what were you doing there then? I mean, you were excused all duties. What happened?
Well, at first I arrived there one afternoon and I went home. Then I went sort of checked in there and then went to my home and went back the next morning to go on CO's orders. And well, I had an interview with the CO.
Do you know which CO it was?
Major Holden, I believe.
What was it? What happened at the interview?
And he asked me if I wanted to sign on and be a weapons training instructor. He could promise me a promotion at sergeant. I was still technically a Lance Corporal at that time, although I never sort of used a rank. I was still technically a Lance Corporal. If I took it within 6 months, I said, well, no, I didn't want to make the Army my career.
So this was a question of signing on as a full-time regular?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, why not? Because, I mean, you'd got one career already. You were a trained plumber.
Yeah.
But this was an offer of not a bad career as a full-time weapons instructor, you know.
Well, maybe I was one or two regrets about that, you know. I mean, it was just that I wanted to get out, you know, and that might have been a bit difficult with one eye. First of all, the only thing I ever did, I'm left-handed, and the only thing I ever did right-handed in my life was fire a rifle, and I fired a rifle naturally right-handed, and I lost the sight of my right eye. Mind you, to be honest, I think I could easily taught myself to fire from my left shoulder. Being left-handed, that wouldn't have been too much of a problem. Anyway, I said no.
And so you decided to stick with plumbing in
the
long
term? I decided I want to get out, do my 2 years and get out. So we said, well, okay, we could do with a plumber round a camp, round a depot, you know. You can do what you like, you can have a permanent pass and live at home or whatever, and I'll charge you every day. He says, you better have some leave now, disembarkation leave. So 2 weeks leave and come back and we'll sort you out a job. And I walked out, then marched out off SEAL's orders. And the warrant officer said to me, how much leave do you want? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, how much leave do you want? So I sort of looked at him. He said, well, what about 5 weeks? So I say, 5 weeks? You heard what he said. Yeah, he said he wouldn't know his dates on the pass. And he say, it's one thing, a bit of a problem. Them dogs ain't been running very well at the dog track, and the wife keep getting on to me about this, that, and the other. And I wonder, so I'm a bit short of cash at the minute. Could you lend me X many pounds? I can't remember exactly what it was. And I was saying, well, I know I had 5 months in hospital on £1 a week. You can imagine how much money I've got. No, 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 he says, that's all right. He says, for coincidence, they're paying out now. I'll ring the pay corporal and you'll get 5 weeks. 5 weeks pay and 5 weeks. 5 weeks full pay and 5 weeks ration allowance. Which we worked out was whatever. And I said, well, look, in that event, I can lend you so-and-so, because, I mean, I ain't that stupid. Although I was only about 20 when I knew that a lend might be a little bit, might be difficult to ask for it back. So I go over to where they were paying out and waited at the back. So it was only me left there, and the pay corporal called me forward to the desk. And he said, well, I'm sorry, but I ain't got any petty cash. And I didn't know you would have to pay all this money. I think he gave me about £2 cash. And I'll send the rest through to you in a post of draft or something like that. And of course, I had to go back and tell this guy this. So, sorry, I can't lend you the money. I ain't got it. I don't know what, you know.
How did you react?
He weren't very pleased, I don't think. But then the pass was signed and the dates were on, and I went off on 5 weeks. Came back after 5 weeks.
Do you know the name of the warrant officer? Or perhaps
I can't remember. I can't remember.
So what happened when you came back?
I came back on a Friday and walked into the camp, and I thought, well, I'll get a bed. I ain't got a permanent pass yet, so I should have to stay the night there. I won't leave it too late and go back in the evening. I went back about 4 in the afternoon. Thought it'd give me time. I can always go out in the evening and go home if I want to, or see my mates in the over, you know, in the city on a Friday evening, my friends. And where we usually go Friday nights, wherever that was, I can't remember now, probably the Samson or somewhere. And I didn't always do that. So I go back about 4 PM, and he had me thrown in the cells for, should have been back at Rivoli, but fortunately I'm a pass, I won't know any time to report back. So I said, as far as I'm concerned, this date is on the 23:59 night. He said, well, give me a pass. I say, no fair. I'll keep it up with me. I get on orders in the morning. So he had to let me out. And I went out that night. And I had to go on parade the next morning with the rest. And they had a parade. And because it obviously worked Saturday mornings in them days. And he called me off parade. Said, you're going to, this is probably about 8 o'clock in the morning, half past eight. He said, you're on the train, half past ten, you've been posted down, so I'll be Middlesex, headquarters East in command. I say, no, I'm staying here. I've got to do the rest of my time off in here, around the camp. No. So who said so? I said, Major Holden. He said, well, Major Holden isn't here. He's away for the weekend. He said, and I've had an order, I've got to send somebody to the headquarters Eastern Command. So at Hounsville, he's saying, and that's got to be you. And I said, well, I ain't got a uniform. Well, I've got this uniform I picked up in this hospital in Korea with an Australian jacket, Canadian trousers, etc., etc. Say, don't worry about that. And within 5 minutes, I was fully kitted out, brand new uniforms, everything. The whole lot. And there was a jeep waiting for me. Put my gear in. I was down Thorpe Station and on the train.
And this would be December, I presume?
November.
November still.
Right. November. Yeah. And I was on the train to Hounsville. Got there, walked in the camp, an MP on the camp found us a place up, gave me instructions, go over the underground at Hounsville West, and go round the cavalry barracks, which is only a little way away. I go round there, walk in the gate, MP on the gate said, what do you want? I got all my gear. I said, I've been posted here. Say, no, on the weekend you went. I said, oh, I have. Say, no, not on the weekend, there's no one there. So what do you mean? He said, they all go on the weekend. There's only a few hours here. He said, there's no one to give you any benefit. I said, well, what we got to do? So we said, well, I don't know. I said, well, can't sleep in one of the cells. He said, well, no, we say, because we have to keep some of our souls in case there's a lot of trouble down Piccadilly or anything on a Saturday night. And the MPs were throwing out the squaddies in the nick for the night. Say, so we can't let you stay in the nick. I said, well, what have we got to do? He said, well, we don't know. I said, well, can I leave my kit bag here? He said, yes. Yeah. So I got back on the underground and went back to Norwich. I was back in Norwich half past five. And for the weekend, and went back on a Monday, and then someone to work in the officers' mess.
And this is the cavalry barracks?
The cavalry barracks, which are headquarters Eastern Command.
And what duties were you doing in the officers' mess?
Well,
because you were excused duties, really.
Yeah. And they said, well, what have you got to do? I said, well, I don't know. And they said, well, about being a batman. So I said, well, all right then. So I was in the officers' mess. And I didn't really bat for any officers in particular. But I had one who was under close arrest. I used to have to bat for him, who was waiting for a court martial. Confined to his room, I used to take his food into him. And what I did quite a lot, to be honest with you, there was a lot of boys there who were in the Pioneer Corps. And a lot of them who were dyslexic. And some of them weren't very bright. And dyslexic, you know, and they used to just sort of sweep the roads and whitewash everything and them sort of jobs. But some of them were just like, just ordinary, you know, just because they didn't know much about dyslexia in those days, did they? You know, that was That was something which was, but they did put them in the Pioneer Cove, they couldn't read or write. And my busiest day was, the ones who had normal intelligence, a lot of dyslexic, that was the first time I really came across anything like that, you know, but there was quite a number of them there. And they were batmen, but I used to bat for two or three officers. But things like Monday mornings, I used to be busy because I used to have to make out the laundry lists and things like that. And I used to have to read company orders to them every day because that's something every soldier has to read, because they couldn't read it, could they? So I used to have to read that out to them. And, you know, little odds and sods, I used to do bits and pieces. And
so you were just helping them. You weren't helping teach them read, you were just helping them.
No. I used to read to some of them. Some of them used to get me to write letters and read letters for them, you know.
Now, was it while you were there that you met Wormald's father?
Well, no, it wasn't. When I was on leave after coming out of hospital.
Well, tell us that story now, because that's quite interesting, because this is Second Lieutenant Wormald who'd been killed on the 29th.
That's right. Whilst I was home on leave, after I'd come out of hospital, and I was officially at Britannia Barracks, and I was home on this extended leave, suddenly there's a tap at my house. I lived with my parents then, and there's a tap on my house, and on the door one morning, and I went there, and there's... this chap stood there, he looked a bit of a gent, and you know, and he said, introduced himself, and that was Lieutenant Wormald's father. And he lived at East Dereham, which is about 15, 16 miles from Norwich. And he said that he'd been given my name and address by the battalion, or by the, you know, Britannia Barracks, and he's come to see what I could tell him about his son, because his son was, they told him I was probably one of the last people to see him. And he had notification that he was posted missing, presumed dead. Could I help him? And I said, well, I couldn't, not 100%. But I did feel, you know, in all honesty, don't build your hopes up too much. I don't think, I believe he was dead, but I can't say for certain. I never had the opportunity. I never had an opportunity to get to him to see. I was trying to when I came across Bob Guess, and then it all went crazy. But I told him, you know, exactly that, and he was quite good about it.
Did you tell him it straight, what had happened, or did you sort of...
I told him.
Make it easier for him?
No, because there's no point in trying to build up the guy's hopes, man. I thought in my own mind he was dead. I mean, I'd have felt terrible if I'd have said to him, well, I think there's a, you know, or this, you know, so it made him feel, well... there's a good opportunity, he's still alive, because I didn't think he was. And I thought to myself, well, he won't give up hope until... because at that time, the Chinese or the communists weren't telling us who they had prisoner or anything. And I thought, well, why build his hopes up when I felt within myself that the man was dead? Which he was. And so that happened, you know, while I was on there.
Now, one question I should have asked earlier, but it's just occurred to me. I'm not asking you to criticise at all, but I just wanted your opinion. Do you think that Wormald took you too far up the hill, further than perhaps was intended? Or I know I should have put this earlier, but you mentioned that you got almost to the top of the hill.
Yeah, I think we did go too far. That's why I was making my way up to tell them I think we're going too far, because... But, I mean, they're saying in that book that was to catch a prisoner, but I was thought I was to stop them from digging trenches on the forward slopes, but...
So, you felt that it was a mistake to have gone so far?
Yeah, I mean...
Did you blame Wormald for that? Was it in character?
No, that was a bit... he always got a bit lost. And I said, to go and tell him where we were. We were always, I was a nice chap. I liked him, you know. I liked him as a man and I liked him as a person. And, you know, because I could communicate with him, he wasn't one of these people who you couldn't talk to or anything. Or he took a bad view of you if you did say, make a reasonable opinion, you know. And, yeah, he was a good man. And I was sort of making my way forward to say, do we all stop? Are we going too far?
Okay. Now, so you met Wormald's brother. You also had some contact with Bob Guest's family. Was this while you were at Eastern Command? Or
yeah, when I was at Eastern Command, his father got in touch with me via the phone through the orderly room there. They must have told him where I was to say that, to ask me a similar question. And but I was more in doubt. I thought he might have been dead, but I thought it was a possibility he was alive. But I did felt 75-80% of me felt he was dead. But I didn't know. Certainly weren't dead when I spoke to him. But then this grenade went off in close proximity to booth office within inches. And I thought he'd been hit in the stomach as well, and which is always a very bad gunshot wound. But it wasn't actually; it was shrapnel in the cheek of his face, and that was causing the blood to come out of his mouth. But I assumed when I saw blood coming out of his mouth that he'd been hit in the stomach as well. I could see the leg, as I said earlier, laying at right angles. Halfway down, and I'd say it was badly broken.
So you thought with a stomach wound, the leg wound, and then possibly some more from the grenade.
Blown up from a grenade. I thought, well, but I wasn't certain. And then, about a couple of weeks before Christmas, they contacted me again at headquarters, Eastern Command. His father did, to say they'd had notification from the War Office that he would be talking on Peking radio on Christmas Day. They were going to allow a few of the prisoners to speak on Peking on the radio. And he would be one of them. So I was really pleased that at least he was alive, they wouldn't have said that. At least he was alive, and of course his parents were very, very pleased, obviously. And
they didn't actually get to hear it, though, did they?
No, they contacted me again after Christmas. They went, I think, to the BBC studio somewhere, and they had these people were turning in, or all these Chinese, because that was quite difficult in them days with the old steam radios. But they'd, you know, to turn in to all these Chinese radio stations. But nothing at all. They were there all day and no contact at all. But at least we felt then, and I felt then, at least he's still alive. And the next thing I knew, Bob Guest was after I'd been discharged from the army.
I'll come back to that one.
Okay.
That's just, so you were just doing his duties at Eastern Command, you know, at the cavalry barracks from November 53 till when?
So I was discharged in March.
54?
50, no, 53. That was November 52.
Sorry, yeah, I'm getting middled up with the years.
I was discharged. I got my discharge from the cavalry barracks. I had to report to Britannia Barracks, but I'm not just to report there. But in the discharge papers and everything were from headquarters, Eastern Command. I was there when the floods were on in 53 on those coasts, you know, just before I was discharged.
Oh, tell me about that then.
Because I remember that night quite well.
What do you remember?
Well, we used to have a duty officer who used to stay in the officer's mess. He had a room there. I did it for 24 hours for the whole of the division. And I used to bat for him, I used to keep an eye on him, I wasn't much to do for him, but I used that as one of my little jobs. And that was in the evening, and he came there, and I thought he'd been drinking. He was saying, I think he had had a few beers, and he was saying all the coast was flooded. We've got to get the troops out. And I was saying, yes, sir, go to bed. We get them out in the morning. No, he said, I've got to get the troops out. He said, all the coast is flooded. I thought, what are you talking about? I was in London. There's quite a lot of wind. There weren't no rain. What was he on about? No, we've got to get the troops out. There's all floods on the east coast. And I was going, yes, sir. Why don't you go to bed and we'll do it in the morning? No, I'm going to get them out. And I thought, well, please, your bloody self, that's up to you. Good job I didn't stop him physically, would I? Because it was all flooded, and they were getting the troops out.
Did you actually go with them?
No, I didn't. No, I stayed there. And
this is March, wasn't it?
This was in March, wasn't it? I was also there too when the big fog was on in London in 52-53, when all the cattle were dying in the fields were around London. Remember that? I've never seen anything like it. That was then when they brought out the Clean Air Bill about smoke from chimneys and things. After that, people were dying. I forget how many people died in London, asthmatics, from the smog, as they called it. And that was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. I went to the Naffy that night, and our barrack room was about 30 paces straight out the Naffy door to our barrack room door. Me and my mate got lost in the fog. That was that bad that we eventually walked into the wall of the building, and we fought away along the wall till we got to the door. And that was that bad. They even excused the people who were on jankers, didn't have to go and the visibility was that bad. People on jankers didn't have to report during the evening in the guard room.
And this was also March.
I'm trying to remember, it was March or February time. It must have been February, I should think. Now, that was quite a good camp. I enjoyed that because there was about loads and loads of service girls, what do you call them, not ATS, they didn't change it to the Women's Royal Army Corps, whatever it was, racks there, and about four times as many women as there were men on the camp. They were drivers and done secretarial jobs, and so that was quite good. I enjoyed that single book, and I know there was a good selection of girls. You had to be careful though, because if you were caught fraternising on the camp, you got posted straight away. But that was good.
So yeah. Then you were demobilised March 53.
Yeah.
Now, what were you going to do? You know, you come back into civilian life, minus affected the sight of one eye.
Going back to plumbing.
Sorry?
Going back to plumbing.
And was there any problem going back to plumbing? I mean, you know, after being away for a couple of years.
There was a problem. And I'll be honest, I took a long while to settle down. I didn't think I would, but I did take a hell of a long while to settle down. And
what were the problems?
Well, firstly, you see, I'd only just finished my apprenticeship when I was called up. I'd initially been deferred till I was 21, but when they wanted to get some older boys in, I was 19 and a half, I finished my apprenticeship, so they called me up. Now, them 18 months as an improver, as they used to call them in those days, would have done me a lot of good, but that didn't happen. So I then come out, but your employer had to re-employ you for 6 months when you come out. He had to. I go to Sam, and he got the official receivers in. So I couldn't go back to him. He's gone bankrupt. I couldn't go back to him. So I went down to Labour Exchange to see if I could get a job as a plumber. And I actually got a job at, where did I go first? Moulton Hall Air Base. They were rebuilding Moulton Hall Air Base at the time. And that was actually, whilst I was working there at Moulton Hall, and I used to travel backwards and forwards. I used to run a coach from the city or a bus from Norwich to Mildenhall every day. When I'm out with Bob Guest again.